You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, and happy Monday to you. John Nichols on the line with us. He is the Washington correspondent for The Nation magazine, thenation.com. And, John, welcome back to the program.
It is great to be with you, Tom, as always.
Thank you. Hijinks in Wisconsin. Everything
always.
from a date has been set to Tom Barrett has jumped into the race. Tell us about it.
Yeah, things are really happening, and you know, it's fascinating that Wisconsin is the one state, maybe one of many states, where the Republican presidential race is not the big political story. It happens that Romney, Santorum, all those guys are campaigning in Wisconsin today because tomorrow is Republican primary day. But Wisconsinites, and I tell you, my Republican friends will confirm this, are completely focused on this recall election. The election has been set. The primary date for the election for governor will be May 8th. You'll have Democratic and Republican primaries that day. The general election will be June 5th. And so Scott Walker, who a year and a half ago attacked labor rights and so much about public services, will face what is really the first great accountability moment for an American governor, an American official, who tried to bring what you just very well referred to as this European austerity agenda. Mm. Cut everything, go after the unions, to this country. And so it's a big deal, and people are very excited about it.
Yeah, and first of all, I think it's kind of a given at this point. Mitt Romney has outspent Ricky Santorum 50-1 in Wisconsin, and he's leading by 8 points, so he's probably going to walk away with Wisconsin. That's a given for tomorrow. Okay, so we got that out of the way.
Tom, that was the best discussion of the Republican race this year.
Really? I don't know if you saw over the top of Crooks and Liars. There is, I just have to share these two quotes. Ann Romney did a radio show last week.
Mm-hmm.
And just a second, let me get it up here. And she said, whoops, there it goes. And by the way, Sarah Palin co-hosting the Today Show is not an anchor, April Fool's joke. Anyhow, she said, speaking of her husband, she says, we better unzip him and let the real Mitt out. And then a few sentences later, she said, my husband isn't stiff, okay? We'll just leave that as it is.
One or the other, Ann Romney.
Yeah.
One or the other.
Yeah, or maybe both. Who knows? Which raises the question, with this recall of Scott Walker coming up, first of all, you've got, I don't think most Americans realize Paul Ryan represents Wisconsin or represents a part of Wisconsin.
He sure does. He represents southeastern Wisconsin, and he's a fascinating political construct. You and your wise listeners will understand this, Tom. Paul Ryan comes from a district that has no TV stations in it. It's a rural, small city district. And so he's kind of been able to fool Wisconsinites and keep getting reelected, because he's a nice guy. He's a hail fellow, well met personally. And I think until this year, most Wisconsinites didn't know that he was an on-Ron reading, you know, hard right point man for the Republican agenda. Now the truth is out. And the interesting thing is that he is up for re-election this year. He's going to have a much tougher re-elect. But the fascinating thing is over the last couple of days, it's been absolutely obvious that Paul Ryan is angling for a place on Mitt Romney's ticket. Paul Ryan said about a week and a half ago that he would consider an offer of a vice presidential nomination. He has spent the last 4 days appearing at Mitt Romney's side at every event in Wisconsin. They clearly seem to like each other. And it's a fascinating notion that, you know, Ryan may be, you know, looking at a up and out sort of situation of trying to get on that Republican ticket.
Well, it works, although he may be up, out, and out.
You're right.
Although, on the other hand, you know, you
try to run on that.
Yeah, but on the other hand, you've got the Koch brothers. You know, they've pledged hundreds of billions of dollars to destroy the Obama presidency,
love Paul Ryan. In fact, the interesting thing is, if you put Paul Ryan on the Republican ticket in 2012, he brings in the social conservatives because he is very hard right on social issues, as right wing as Santorum, but he also is the truly beloved figure for that Wall Street corporate right. They see him as the guy who actually understands the whole point of it, which is to talk about balancing budgets, but really to use this budget moment as a vehicle to redirect money toward insurance companies and Wall Street speculators through voucherization of Medicare and through privatization of Social Security.
Yeah, yeah. So, but on the other hand, if he can you run for Congress and the vice presidency at the same time? You can, can't you? I mean, Dennis Kucinich
has done it. Enough, under Wisconsin, some states are different. Wisconsin law would allow him to do that, okay. But Wisconsinites are pretty level-headed folks. I think to be honest, I'm going to go to this core point. If Mitt Romney were to pick Paul Ryan, that just reinforces this dawning realization on the part of the voters in his district, in Paul Ryan's district, that he is not their representative. He really is the point man for a Wall Street corporate agenda. And that's a big deal because Paul Ryan's district, in reelecting him in 2008, also voted quite strongly for Barack Obama for president. So I think that as Ryan becomes more identified with the National Republican Party and its agenda, he becomes much more vulnerable politically.
Very, very interesting. And this mayor, Tom Barrett?
Yes.
All the polling that I've seen or all the commentaries that I've seen up until the last week or so, and I only say that because it's in the last week I haven't really seen anything, have suggested that while Walker may not survive the recall and isn't all that popular in some quarters and may have to rerun for his own seat, that there isn't a Democrat who's stronger than him.
An interesting issue, yes. Tom Barrett, the mayor of Milwaukee, who's just gotten in the race, he entered on Friday afternoon, is the guy who ran against Walker in 2010. In that 2010 race, Tom Barrett ran exactly even with Russ Feingold. It is true that they both got beat, but they both got beat in the Republican wave of 2010. I was talking to Tom Barrett just a few minutes ago, and his argument, I think it's a credible one, is that the landscape has changed politically. And now, as a very well-known figure, he would be a very viable candidate.
Makes
He's
sense.
Not the only Democrat running. There are other Democrats in that primary. But Barrett's argument is that he can close the deal this time.
Right. Which, it makes perfect sense. It sounds like that's entirely possible. Okay. Anything else you wanted to cover on this? Have I missed anything?
You're not missing a thing, Tom. As always, you're on board. We've had a fascinating few days here in Wisconsin. The one thing that is quite amazing is that all these stories are starting to come together, and that is that Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum, but especially Romney, has been going out of his way to identify himself with Scott Walker.
Right.
That may help in a Republican primary, but he may come to regret that come November.
Well, or it may be the base that he needs to bring along with him. I mean, it's really hard to say. Tonight at the E Street Theater here in Washington, D.C., I'm going to introduce Robert Greenwald, where he's playing in the theater. He's going to do a little song and dance and then play his movie about the Koch brothers that he's just rolling.
Great new movie. I'm a part of it. I've been involved with it. It's going to be debuting in Madison on April 26th at the Barrymore Theater. Yep. He's taken it across the country, and I really think that just as Robert Greenwald exposed all the realities of Fox News without Fox, I think he's going to really rip a lot of things open with this new documentary. I'm very excited.
I agree. And the point that I was making is that Paul Ryan, to a large extent, is a Koch brother invention. Scott Walker, to a large extent, is a Koch brother invention. Or if not invention, sort of like, Frankenstein's monster.
A product.
Yeah, exactly. A product that has been produced and manufactured and promoted by them. And having a little more Koch brothers into the Romney campaign certainly couldn't hurt Mitt Romney. Although 73% of all Wall Street money has 91% has gone to Republicans, 73% of it's gone to Mitt Romney so far.
Yeah.
So
this is getting to the heart of the matter. We aren't going to beat him money to money, dollar to dollar. That is never going to happen in an American race. What could happen and what is possible is that idea to an idea and people power versus money power. That's where things get exciting, and I think that you're going to, tonight, with this documentary, be a part of putting those ideas out.
Yep, I'm looking forward to it. John, next time we get you on, we're in 55 million homes on TV. We got to get you in here so people can see.
In
Skype,
brother.
Yeah. Come on in on Skype as well. Okay, John Nichols.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
John Nichols, The Nation, thenation.com for all of John's writing. We'll be right back.
Recall, recall, keep on marching to the recall. He put our backs against the wall. We keep marching to the recall.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens in Wisconsin. But, frankly, I think that this is a bellwether for the entire nation. I think things are changing, times are changing. One of the things that doesn't change, though, is fear. Fear is one of the most powerful political weapons there is. On Sunday night, someone walked up to a Planned Parenthood clinic in Grand Chute, Wisconsin, speaking of Wisconsin, and detonated a homemade explosive device outside a window. Fortunately, there was nobody inside the clinic at the time. No one was injured. Wisconsin, like a number of other states under control of Republican state legislatures, is currently in the midst of a heated debate over abortion. And that rhetoric could have turned the war on women hot, leading to some less than stable religious warrior to attack the Planned Parenthood clinic. I mean, we don't know for sure what happened yet. The police are continuing their investigation. And this is not about abortion. I'm not, this whole talk, as you know, I think that we haven't had a national conversation about abortion in this country in decades, and we need to. But this story of this Planned Parenthood clinic getting bombed is something that, in all probability, you have not seen in the news. Did you see it on the evening news, or on the evening news last night, or in the morning news this morning? Was it covered, by all the medias? It's gotten virtually no coverage in the mainstream media. But just think for a moment. If that had been a church or a government building, and the bomb maker had been wearing a turban and yelling Allah Akbar, or a member of the new Black Panthers, then you can bet it would have gotten wall-to-wall media attention. The word terrorism would have been plastered under breaking news graphics on TVs all across America. But this act of terrorism, it wasn't committed by an African-American, it wasn't committed by a Muslim, it was presumably committed by a white Christian, because that's pretty much 100% of all the people who've been so far arrested, convicted, whatever, for bombing Planned Parenthood committees. As I said, this has nothing to do with abortion or Planned Parenthood. This has to do with who's the terrorist. So why is it that our media doesn't cover it when the terrorist is a white Christian? It's because of the way the fear machine in America works. Make no mistake about it. There is a fear machine in this country. In fact, it's a multi-billion dollar industry. It makes tremendous profits by scaring Americans to death. It helps pen up politicians by scaring Americans to death. It creates political movements by scaring Americans to death. And scaring them to death about everything from Muslims to undocumented immigrants to the debt to the new Black Panther Party. And it gets flipped on, turned on, whenever it's convenient to whip up fear in America. Like whenever Americans need to be scared about the deficit. Ah, look out! We got to have austerity measures. We got to profitize the social safety net in America. We got to have chaired off porno scanners in our airports. Make some money for Mr. Chertoff, and his company, or the company he represents. With Muslims in particular, this fear machine is incredibly effective, although it's also used against African Americans. The Center for American Progress recently uncovered a network of right-wing organizations that have bankrolled an Islamophobia fear machine to the tune of $42 million. And it only serves one purpose: make us all frightened of Muslims. Can you imagine? $42 million fear machine, all about Muslims? So back in 2010, when a Muslim organization tried to build a community center in Lower Manhattan, remember that? The Victory Mosque. No, this is Fox speak. They turned the fear machine on full blast. And the fearmongers went to work in places like Fox so-called news. And then someone flipped the switch on again to scare Americans into thinking Sharia law was on the market, taking over America. Be afraid, they said. Be very afraid. But the real purpose of the fear machine is not just to make Americans scared to death anyone wearing a turban. It's, it does that. But it's incredibly profitable. From defense contractors who are making billions off the never-ending war on terror, to security contractors who are making billions off Chertoff X-ray porno scanners in our airports, to Islamophobes who are making billions of dollars off TV appearances, books, and lectures, and whose TV network Fox is making a fortune on this, The fear machine is generating enormous fortunes for those people who want you to be afraid of somebody. Not to mention the fact that there's enormous political benefits for the Republican Party, because when people are afraid, it's the Republicans who step up and say, we'll tell you who to be afraid of. From Ronald Reagan giving his very, very first speech as a presidential candidate down in Philadelphia, Mississippi, and talking about states' rights. In other words, be afraid of those African Americans. To John Bolton running around going, oh, I gotta be, and Dick Cheney, be afraid of Iran. And John McCain, be afraid of Iran. To Fox News, oh, the new Black Panther Party, you know about? Yeah, three guys. So when a Planned Parenthood clinic gets bombed in Wisconsin, there's a real simple reason why that fear machine doesn't get fired up. No money to be made. No political points to be scored. No one wants to install porno scanners in Planned Parenthood clinics. No one stands to profit from a never-ending war against Christian extremism. In fact, Republicans don't win elections by defending Planned Parenthood. So the fear machine falls silent, and the brazen attack on pretty much every, you know, whatever. From women's reproductive rights, you could position it as that, or you could position it as the brazen attack against Muslims. On and on it goes. We Americans go about our day as if everything's fine, at least until the fear machine gets turned on when a Muslim does something that could be spun into a threat. And I'm telling you, my friends, our nation was not conceived in fear. We stared down the greatest military in the world and won our independence from the British. We're the nation in the midst of the Great Depression.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Where our president said, you have nothing to fear but fear itself. And he backed down Hitler in Europe and he kicked the Tojo's butt in the Pacific during World War II.
Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Come on, baby.
Okay, back in 2005, Albert Florence was sitting on the passenger side of his wife's Beamer as they were driving down the street. Police officer pulled him over because she was speeding. Asked who he was. She said, he's my husband. The police officer ran them both through the computer, came back. This guy had an unpaid traffic ticket, a parking fine, actually, a parking ticket. Or something. Actually, I don't know that it's a parking ticket. It's described as a fine, a traffic fine. Okay. It actually had been paid, but they took him to jail, stripped him naked, made him manipulate his private parts so that all dimensions could be seen, told him, in his words, to turn around, spread your cheeks and cough. That was the phrase that he said. He says, I'm a man's man. He's 6'3". He says, but I felt like less than a man after that. He went through two jails, and in both jails, he went through these strip searches. And so he sued. He said, you can't do this to me. A strip search for a traffic fine? That, by the way, was already paid? This has been one of the things that the Occupy Wall Street people have been so upset about, is many of these Occupy Wall Street protesters, when they get arrested, are subjected to strip searches, particularly the women, and particularly in very humiliating ways. So this went before the Supreme Court a few months ago, and this morning they ruled 5-4. Want to take any bets on who the five were and what their ruling was? Yes, if you are 12 years old and you brought aspirin to school without permission, you may be arrested and strip searched. Yes, if you're jaywalking, you may be arrested and strip searched. Yes, if you are protesting anything, anywhere, and step off the curb into the street or do anything that causes a police officer to think that they have reason to arrest you, you may be arrested and strip searched. The four dissenting votes from the four Clinton and Obama appointees said, wait a minute, this is going beyond the bounds of the Fourth Amendment. It's not unreasonable. It's okay to strip search somebody if you're going to put them into a max, if you're moving somebody into the general population of a maximum of a regular facility. In other words, if somebody's going to prison for the next couple of years, whether it be for bank fraud or for murder, somebody's going to prison, no problem. Strip search them. We want to make sure that they're not carrying in a razor blade or drugs or something like that. But the county jail for a speeding ticket or for protesting out in front of the health insurance company or out in front of the Chamber of Commerce for an overnight? No. That's not, there's nothing reasonable. There's not a reasonable expectation that that person is going to have contraband. And the Fourth Amendment says that before your person shall be violated, there has to be a reasonable belief that you've committed a crime. Now, this is a second violation. You've already been arrested. You're already being put in jail. But now we're going to violate your body on top of that. Well, the five right-wing justices said, it's just fine with us. Strip search away. This court, which holds itself to absolutely no standard of decency, which ignores the judicial code of conduct, if any, here you had Thomas and Scalia showing up at a fundraiser. I mean, if any other judge, I printed this thing out. If somebody out there could bring it in to me, I'd appreciate it. If any other judge had done this, it would be over. I mean, that judge would be out on their butt so fast. It is. I just have to share this with you. This is just incredible. This is mind-boggling. More recent, this is from the National Memo. And more recently, the title of the article is The High Court Supremely Unethical Activists by Joe Connison. He says, more recently, Scalia and Thomas were used as celebrity bait by the ultra-right Koch brothers, David and Charles, to draw well-heeled supporters to a secretive conference on undermining the Obama administration at a fancy Western resort. Thomas, the right-wing bloc's cynical attitude toward judicial corruption was expressed most succinctly by Chief Justice Roberts in his opinion upholding a West Virginia judge who had failed to recuse himself from a major case involving the A.T. Massey Coal Company. Roberts couldn't see anything wrong with that judge's conduct, even though Don Blankenship had donated $3 million to the judge's reelection campaign, and he was the guy on trial. That was even too much for Justice Kennedy, himself a former lobbyist and the son of a lobbyist, who voted with liberal justices to uphold the constitutional right to adjudication by a judge who has been untainted. But here's the thing. This Clement guy, or Clement, who argued the Obamacare, who argued against it, he works for a company called Bancroft PLL. Let's consider this. Scalia and Thomas appeared as guests of honor at a fundraising dinner by the right-wing Federalist Society, which was sponsored by Bancroft PLCC, major firm in a litigation against the Affordable Care Act, on the very same day last November that they revealed an appeal brief on the case from Paul Clement, the Bancroft attorney whose arguments they received so cordially this week. In fact, Clement, keep in mind, this is the guy who argued against Obamacare before the Supreme Court last week. Everybody was so up in a tizzy about. Did you hear anything in the media about the fact that a couple of months ago he had sat between Scalia and Thomas at a fundraiser for the Federalist Society? In fact, Clement sat at a table sandwiched between the two justices, Scalia was seated with Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, who had told the Federalists he would rely on them, that's Scalia and Thomas, to help undo the affront represented by health care reform. And for good measures, Justice Sam Alito enjoyed the event at another table nearby. Joe Connison reporting. Tell me we don't have the best government money can buy, and we've got to do something to get the money out of it. This is just amazing. Henry in St. Louis. Hey, Henry, what's up?
How you doing, Tom? Look, I'll tell you, I just don't get this, and I just don't understand. I don't know what part of the branch need to overlook the Supreme Court, but bottom line, something has to be done.
Congress, Article 3, Section 2 of the United States Constitution says the Supreme Court shall operate under regulations established by Congress. Congress can pass a law that says that the Supreme Court has to, at the very least, hold itself to the same judicial code of conduct that all federal judges have to hold themselves to, which it says if your wife is making $800,000 from a bunch of billionaires who keep bringing business before the court, you have to recuse yourself. You can't rule on the case. If you're showing up at a fundraiser about, you know, doing away with Obamacare, you're not, and sitting with the lawyer who's going to be arguing in front of you, you're not allowed to make a decision.
But look at all the stupid decisions these guys are made.
Yeah.
First, they inmates are not allowed to have DNA testing, even though DNA testing proved so many inmates were innocent of the crime they were accused of.
Yep.
And then they're going to turn around and say, okay, if you get arrested for having a ticket, maybe say like when you was a teenager and you forgot about it, and now you're going to go to jail and get processed in two jails and get strip searched?
Right. Twice this guy was strip searched.
For real?
Twice this guy was strip searched for a ticket that he had already paid. And yeah, for real, this is the state of our Supreme Court. This is how corrupt the Roberts Court is, and we need to start calling it the Roberts Court at every opportunity. Thanks a lot for the call. Mary in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, Mary, what's up?
Oh, hi. I'm going back to the fear thing.
Yeah.
We're going to Europe pretty soon, and people ask me, aren't you afraid Israel is going to bomb Iran? They have nukes, you know, and then they talk about how Iran has nukes. But my main question is, you always hear people saying that Ahmadinejad said, we're going to blow Israel off the map.
He didn't say that. What Ahmadinejad said, and it was several years ago, in Farsi, was words to the effect that the map that shows the lands that Israel is currently occupying is not accurate, that Israel shouldn't be occupying as much land as they are. And that got twisted into Ahmadinejad saying that Israel has no right to exist. He's not said that. And in fact, he, a couple of weeks ago, was taken, you know, dragged in front of the mullahs for being inflammatory and getting the world all upset. I mean, they don't want the sanctions. And, you know, getting the world all upset with all this, seeming nuclear rhetoric. Ahmadinejad actually has virtually no power. He's basically a figurehead president. So,
really?
Yeah. I mean, you know, look it up. Look it up. I am not, frankly, afraid of Iran. I'm, you know, America should not be the land of the land of the fearful and the viewers of Fox News. It should be the land of the brave and the home of the free. It's time for us to say, no, thank you. We're not scared.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Can you believe the Supreme Court this morning? You have no rights. Sorry. Get naked.
Maybe a black boy or a Mexican kid. The beanie doesn't matter what he did. The bottom line is I'm not interested in his side. Justice denied.
Taking back the mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you and David in Ruidoso, New Mexico. Do I have that right?
Yes, Tom.
Hey, David. What's up?
Well, I was calling to tell you guys that ever since I've been advocating for the death and robbery of my son, Davis, I've been arrested numerous times for traffic violations.
You've been advocating for what?
For my son, Davis Warner, who was killed and robbed.
Oh, my.
And there was no investigation done.
Right. So you're seen as an agitator, as an activist, and so they've been arresting you as a form of harassment. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes.
Yeah. Been strip searched yet?
I've been. Oh yes.
Huh.
I've been cited numerous times into court, and every time I get cited for traffic violations, I'm arrested.
Yeah.
Amazing. David, thank
you. In February, I won my citation case that I got for accepting donations downtown.
Yeah.
That's paying for my son. And established the First Amendment seminal case in New Mexico.
Oh, that's great. That's
Village of Redoso versus David Warner.
Okay. Well, David, I appreciate your calling, and thanks for the info and for sharing your story with us. Frank in Cambridge, Mass. Hey, Frank, what's up?
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. this came up since you were talking, but I have another point. But there's I saw a film of there was file footage about the 2004 election when George Bush, with everybody was approaching the crowding out the elections in Florida, the election office. And if you there is file footage about this. I saw John Bolton and I saw John Roberts in that crowd.
Yeah. Well, Frank, thank you for the call. John Roberts went down there to coach. He used to be Rehnquist's clerk. He went down there to coach the guy who was going to argue Bush v. Gore. Jay, in Albuquerque, New Mexico, listening on KABQ. Hey, Jay, what's up?
Hi. Thank you, Tom. I've heard you over the years off and on, and I wanted to make quick three comments. Last Friday, a gentleman called saying what will happen to the insurance company if you have a single payer. I worked in UK for 6 years with the national national health insurance, and also I've been to Australia and know about the Medicare for All and in Canada.
Mm-hmm. Are you a physician?
Yeah.
Okay.
And what I feel is the insurance companies are very smart. All the same problems were expressed there. They create, you know, it's a thriving industry in UK. Mm. A lot of my friends have done well. They have private practice.
Sure.
And they have Harley Street offices and things like that.
Yeah, it's basically where they've created a parallel system for wealthy people.
Yeah, even in Australia.
Sure.
And in Canada, I think in Quebec, they're starting something like that,
yep.
You know, for the private. Because especially in U.S., there's a big market for people who want that side, you know,
yeah.
The private side.
Yeah. Well, so, you will always have rich people, and you will always have people who want to serve their needs. And whether it's, you know, Learjets or whether it's healthcare.
Yeah, they'll do very well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Insurance company, I have no doubt they'll do it. The second point was you also made one time about cumin. I come from a part country where there's spices. Mm-hmm. Cumin and turmeric, they are two different things.
No, curcumin is the name of the chemical that is the active ingredient in turmeric.
Oh,
and,
okay.
Cumin, you're correct, is a different different spice.
The other one is a rhizome, you know.
Yes. Yeah, although I think they're different parts of the same plant, aren't they?
No, one is a, I doubt it. Anyway, you may want to verify, but one is a root.
Yeah.
That you powder.
Right.
That's the turmeric.
Right, right.
That's and the other is a little seed like fruit, you know.
Right, the cumin seeds. Yeah, I was just wondering if the cumin seeds, but I wasn't speaking of cumin at all. I was speaking of curcumin.
Okay, I heard it
as cumin. C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N, which is
I think both have medicinal properties.
Yeah, is the isolated. And you know, a lot of the original studies done over the last 30 years that have identified the anti, what is it called, apoptosis, where cancerous cells commit suicide, that have identified curcumin as promoting that, causing cancerous cells to die, and also now prevent dementia or slow the onset of it, and Alzheimer's disease. Those studies are the result of epidemiological work that was done on mostly Indian populations, as in from the country India, where it's a staple in the diet, and they were seeing very, very low rates of these diseases and conditions among people who were eating traditional diets. And when they switched over to Western diets, or they had other diets, or they had curcumin or turmeric, you know, low levels in their diets, they were more likely to have these kind of problems. And so, you know, it's just I find the whole thing fascinating. Anyhow, Jay, thank you for your call.
Another point, you may have done this already. Just maybe you want to write a book about the failure of the Dick Cheney and George Bush's presidency.
Yeah. There are others who are writing those books and doing a fine job of them. I'm working on one right now about, well, it's a piece of that. It's about how the fundamentals have not changed since the Reagan Revolution. Reagan fundamentally altered the fundamentals of America. He rolled back some of the most important protections of not just the New Deal, but going all the way back to the age of the robber barons, that being the Sherman Antitrust Act. Stopped enforcing that in 82, and now we've got these giant corporations. And then, you know, over the last 30 years, following in the footsteps of that philosophy and that ideology, we now have banks deregulated. We have all these large corporations deregulated. We pay a fortune for telephone service in this country compared to what any other developed country pays. We pay a fortune for a really crappy internet service compared to what the rest of other developed countries get. And all of these things you can track back to Reaganomics. And because we haven't changed the fundamentals, I am positing that we are going to see, we ain't seen nothing yet. We think the crash of 2008 was bad. That's just the beginning. But we'll see. I hope I'm wrong, but I think I'm right. Jay, thank you for the call. We'll be back. Dan Gaynor going to be with us next. Pink Slime, want anybody?
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
So, what is it with conservatives and Republicans and pink slime? I don't understand how this became a partisan issue. But apparently it is. This is according to the Des Moines Register, which is like, you know, kind of the epicenter for this area, that this company that, it's called Beef Products Inc. or something like that. This company that makes pink slime. Which is used to be only legal for dog food and cat food. It is the gristle that, you know, surrounds bones and the inside of the skin, the stuff that you can't chew. And it's really hard to get nutrients out of. And so what they do is they grind it up super, super fine so that it becomes like slime and add a little food coloring to it, make it pink, and then treat it with ammonium hydroxide because when it's underneath the skin, it's typically full of bacteria. The company that makes this contributed $500,000 to Republicans over the last decade. And when you consider combined state and federal contributions, it's $820,000 to Republicans. They gave $28,400 to Democrats, 3%, 3.5%, including none to former Democratic governor of Iowa, Tom Vilsack, who is now the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture. And the way the pink slime got into our food supply was George Herbert Walker Bush appointed a woman by the name of Joanne Smith to be the USDA undersecretary back when he started his administration. And in 1989, as he was, you know, keep in mind, he lost the election of 88. As he was on his way out, she was appointed in 89. In 93, as he was on his way out, she, in her last days in office before Bill Clinton assumed the presidency, she said, pink slime is now human food, not just dog food. And then just a couple days later, she went to work for the company that makes pink slime and has made over $1.2 million. So maybe, you know, helping us untangle this and explaining to me why this has become a partisan issue and why this meat company would only give money to Republicans, not Democrats. I don't get it. Dan Gaynor, the vice president of the and T. Boone Pickens, free market fellow of the Business and Media Institute, businessandmedia.org, the website. Dan, welcome back to the program.
It's a pleasure to be back. Too bad. Tom, I thought you were pro-labor. I mean, that's the whole weird thing about this. This is not a partisan issue. It really isn't. I don't care who the company gives money to. I've defended companies I don't like before. I've defended companies I like. I'm at least consistent. You aren't. The crusade against beef. That's what this is. It's meat. It's actually leaner than some of the other beef that we all eat.
Yeah, because there's no fat in gristle.
They cook off the fat. The USDA has approved it. It's beef. It's fine. We all have been eating it for decades.
Right.
All been eating it. Not a problem.
Had no idea.
The classic reality, Tom, of of healthcare stories is always someone gets sick, whether it's the crazy, you know, Tylenol scare that, you know, where people actually were dying, or sometimes whether it's a bogus scare like the Alaren apples. Whatever it is, that's usually the
Well, first
scenario.
Of all, the Alaren apples, I don't think was bogus. I mean, that was...
Okay, we're going to get off track here.
But this stuff is treated with ammonium hydroxide. I mean, it is so...
Do you remember back in 2007, Tom, we had a company, name which escapes me right now, but a beef company that went out of business because it had a big E. coli problem. And the result was more than 20 million pounds of ground beef were recalled for E. coli.
You'll recall, Dan, they didn't go out of business because they had an E. coli problem. They went out of business because they had disabled the detectors on the assembly line because they kept going off. They had birds inside the facility who were pooping on the assembly line and contaminating the food. And it was a management decision that took that company down.
The media wanted to destroy this Beef Products, Inc. company.
Why would...
The media wanted to destroy... is actually an award-winning company. There's only one award given out by that industry every year for the best company, and they got that award. But the result of this crusade means...
They won an award for what? The best pink slime?
For making safe products. For healthy
products. Yeah. I mean, they're treating this stuff with so much ammonia, it would kill anything.
It's not so much ammonia. Even EBC, which eats this company and is trying to put them out of business, says it's...
Why would anybody hate this company? I mean, are you seriously, Dan, here trying to position yourself as the guy who's sticking up for the working stiff, the unionized worker at the meat factory, although most meat factories these days aren't unionized
an
anymore?
A company that makes a perfectly fine product that we all eat. And it wasn't a problem until couple activists decided to crusade against it. And the result has been 650 jobs at BPI, and then today another company that is involved in this same industry declared bankruptcy,
yep.
And that's starting 850 jobs.
Dan, don't you think that there's something very, very kind of honestly and conservatively Darwinian about a company making a product that when Americans discover what it is they don't want, and that company then either having to change or die? I mean, isn't that the way that you think business is supposed to work?
No, the way business is supposed to work is the news media are not supposed to go on a crusade to take out a business where they use a term. I mean, talk about an inflammatory term. I mean, it's like, suppose I were to use inflammatory terms. You know, your budget.
You mean like death tax?
No, you're broadcast on Russia TV. I mean, if I started using the inflammatory terms about them, state-sponsored propaganda, and we
it doesn't matter. I don't, network. You know, I'm not employed by them, Dan. Yeah, I license my show both to them and to Free Speech TV. I got nothing to do with that. But that and feel free, by the way.
ABC but, used this term, this activist-sponsored term, 52 times in 10 reports. No company, no industry can survive that kind of attack, and you keep using it, and every time you use it, very likely you're putting somebody out of work.
I would submit to you that the analogy of attacking a network, I mean, just as easily we could be sitting here talking about how Comcast is, you know, owned by one of the most right-wing families in America, and they own the majority of NBC, for example, and MSNBC.
You'd never be able to tell it from looking at Comcast board, that's for sure.
But I mean, the point is, this isn't about the media. This is about a company that makes a beef product that is referred to as a result of Joanne Smith as finely ground lean beef, which in fact is
a company that makes a product
is gristle.
For years is perfectly safe, perfectly fine.
Don't you think, Dan, that most Americans, when they think that they're getting something called meat, think that they're getting muscle?
Tom, when most Americans think about, you know, I mean, most Americans don't think about the beef, you know, chopping up beef or chicken or whatever, because, you know, anytime you do that, it's going to make some people queasy, no matter what you do.
Well, there are some people who like weird things. I mean, you know, people like tongues and people like chicken gizzards. So why not just tell people honestly what it is? Yeah, okay, this is the pink slime. This is the stuff that came.
That's not honest. It's so thoroughly dishonest. And
well, come up with a name that's not finely ground beef, because this is not finely ground muscle meat.
The meat industry says it's beef. The USDA says it's beef. They're the experts, Tom. You are not. You're the guy supposed to be looking out for the little guy, looking out for American.
Why not call it finely ground gristle?
And trying to shut down American business.
Finely ground, pink-colored, ammonia-treated gristle. Let's call it exactly what it is.
No, Tom, why don't we call it what it really is? It's beef. Where's the beef?
You mean dead cow?
And the offensive.
So are your shoes beef, Dan?
Tom, your whole line of attack is so ridiculous.
This isn't an attack. It's an honest question. I'm assuming you're wearing leather shoes. Are they beef?
No, they're not beef.
Okay, then what makes beef? Isn't it muscle?
What makes beef is the USDA and the meat industry declaring it beef.
I see.
I know you don't like that. Why don't you pick another?
No, I don't like those big government regulators. And I get it that you love the big government regulators and you want to stand up for the unionized workers. I'm impressed. Dan Gaynor, businessandmedia.org. Dan, it's got to be one of the oddest conversations we've ever had. Thanks for coming by.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Interesting. I mean, you know, pigs are flying. We'll be back.
But when that clock strikes midnight and I'm all by myself, I work at combination on my secret hideaway shelf. And I pull out some Fritos corn chips, Dr. Pepper, and an old moon pie. Then I sit back in glorious expectation of a genuine junk food high. And anytime I'm Mr. Natural.
Welcome back, fair and only slightly unbalanced. Tom Hartman here with you. Let's see. Dominic in Chicago. Hey, Dominic, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom? Good to talk to you again.
Thank you.
Yeah, I heard about this thing with this pink slime talked about. This was this last week. I believe it was on Bill Press Show here in Chicago on WSCPT. But here's the real reason why these clowns are wanting to do this thing. Guess who lives next door to Mitt Romney in his elevated garage facility out in La Jolla.
Right. The former or current, I forget which, president of one of the companies that makes pink slime.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why. And this pink slime guy, guess what he did? He gave a whole big, huge donation to Romney.
Yeah.
So that's the reason why.
Surprise!
Yeah, it's no big surprise, Tom. That's the reason why these clowns on Fox and everywhere else are making a big issue about it. Because this guy evidently made this some big deal with Romney, and now it's like payback time, and he's trying to help him.
I suspect
that's making a big fuss.
I suspect that's more coincidence than conspiracy, but it, you know, there may be a cause-effect relationship. And arguably, if you're one of the people who agrees with Dan's conspiracy theory, if you discover that the guy who makes pink slime lives next door to Mitt Romney and gave him a whole bunch of money, then let's go after pink slime and humiliate them both. Except that I haven't seen that connection anywhere in any of the media other than on the progressive blogs and you know, a couple of basic news stories. It is true, and there have been some news stories about it. But usually it's not mentioned. Usually it's just, you know, what is this stuff? So anyhow, Lance wants to get in on this. Lance wants to disagree with me on this. You're on the air. You're on the air from Fort Worth, Texas. Lance, what's up?
Yeah, because normally I don't disagree with you, but I think this is. Let's take the people referring to these small particles of beef as pink slime is like someone referring to chopped cabbage as green poo. It's infantile and it shows a real ignorance of just basic science.
Yeah, except the chopped cabbage is not poo. It's chopped cabbage.
Grown in dirt. It's grown in dirt that's treated with animal waste, you know, manure.
Yeah.
I mean, you could whip up this kind of scare nonsense about any kind of food product. All this stuff that they call pink slime is, it's a way to get those last few slivers of beef out of fat, out of the fatty tissues of a cow. They run through a centrifuge. It separates the tiny little slivers of meat from the fat. They put all that meat together in a big lump. They expose it to ammonium hydroxide, which is a gas, and everybody's going, oh, no, ammonia, ammonia, ammonia. The human body produces ammonia. It's exposed to a gas. That way you don't have E. coli.
Right.
The reason why they do that is because, for example,
it's full of bacteria.
If you have a pound of steak, only a limited area of that steak is exposed to the open air, so it's susceptible to microbes.
Right.
If it's ground, like your hamburger, well, you have an exponentially larger amount of surface area that's exposed to microbes, especially E. coli.
Here's my objection, Lance. My objection, I don't disagree with you that pink slime is a pejorative. In fact, I didn't disagree with Dan about that. My point is that when the industry tries to call this finely ground lean beef, I think that's deceptive because it may be in your world. And I haven't eaten beef since the 1960s, so I guess I'm not an authority on this. But my understanding from back when I was a kid and I did eat meat, and the people I know who do eat meat, beef, is that if it's beef, it's muscle or muscle and fat. And if it's some other part of the cow, you name it. If it's tongue, it's called tongue. If it's testicles, it's called testicles. If it's what, you know, fill in the blank. If it's tail, it's tail. It's, you know, oxtail soup.
This is actual beef. It is actual muscle fibers with fat.
No, it's gristle.
Less fat because the centrifuge.
It is connective tissue. It is the stuff that's
connective tissue.
Pardon?
Muscles are connective tissue.
Well, there's the pieces of it where the muscle ends and the bone begins. There is this stuff, tendons and things like that in between.
You'll find that in any kind of ground beef, whether it's the kind the butcher grinds up for you.
Yeah, but that's, you know, what is left over is specifically, my understanding is that that's specifically what they make this pink slime out of. And as I said, let's call it something that is neutral. To call it finely ground lean beef is just as disingenuous as calling it pink slime. Let's call it finely ground remnants, finely ground fragments, finely ground detritus.
The technical term they call it is lean beef trimmings, and that's what it is, because once it's run through the centrifuge, most of the fat, in fact, more of the fat is stripped away.
Okay, let's call it centrifuge-treated lean beef. Lance, I think we've beaten this topic to death. By the way, speaking of beating topics to death, I got to share this with you. Rick Santorum almost called our president a Nicaraguan. He apparently confused President Obama's nationality. Not a Kenyan, a Nicaraguan. You know that country down there in Central America? Here is Rick Santorum almost calling our president not a Kenyan, but a Nicaraguan.
We know the candidate Barack Obama, what he was like, the anti-war government Nick, America was.
Yeah, government Nick, catch yourself, change the topic really quick. See, he almost called him a Nicaraguan, and, you know, everybody knows he's really a secret Muslim Kenyan, right? Don't you? I mean, you know, come on, Rick, get your pejoratives right here. I got to hear that one more time. It was fascinating.
We know the candidate Barack Obama, what he was like, the anti-war government, America was.
Yeah. Or maybe he was going to say another word. I don't know. It kind of sounds like a G, not a C, huh? Well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he wasn't going to call him a Nicaraguan. What do you think? And how did that happen? You know, is this a Freudian slip or what? Anyhow, 27 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with more of your calls and more of my commentary on the news of the day right after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Corporations, by the way, paying fewer taxes in America than any time in the last 40 years. Surprise! Cheeseburger with finely ground beef. You know, Mitt Romney, Karl Rove is out with a $3.6 million campaign to slash and trash President Obama. Actually, this isn't Karl Rove. This is the Koch brothers. Excuse me. The most notorious oil oligarchs on the right trying to blame the president for his... For the high oil prices, the high price of gasoline, as if he had anything to do with it. Like, as he pointed out in a speech a while ago, like, yeah, right, I'm running for re-election, so I'm going to raise the price of gas. That's going to help me a lot. Well, the oil oligarchs, the Koch brothers, who oddly are in the oil business, would like you to believe that it's all Obama's fault. And they've been running ads to that effect. And so the Obama administration is fighting back. Here's the clip.
Who's behind this ad smearing President Obama? Big oil. That's who. The money they make from high gas prices is going right into Mitt Romney's campaign. Big oil executives have pledged $200 million to help him. And Romney's pledged to protect their record profits. And their billions in special tax breaks, too. These guys all profit. You pay the price. Priorities USA Action is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Oh, very interesting. Very interesting. So, and this is, you know, from a PAC, a political action committee, super PAC, in fact, on the left. So, Paul Begala is one of the guys who put this thing together. So, step by step, we'll see where this all goes. Terry in Panther, Texas. Hey, Terry, what's up?
Yeah, that's Panther, Texas. I wanted to talk about Apache Corporation, you know, drilling for oil on my land.
Apache is one of the kind of medium-sized domestic oil companies.
Yeah, I think they just reported $7 billion in earnings.
Wow. Not too shabby.
But I got a little note from them in August of this last year that they might want to drill on my land. They wanted to set a stake. And I let them do that to see where they might drill, but they said they didn't know if they wanted to drill.
Right.
Well, within a couple of weeks, they emailed me a contract. And in this contract, it was about a half page long. Basically, they could do anything they wanted. And I got advice that you need to protect your land with respect to lots of different things. And so I took the contract, went to find an attorney. Well, 12 days later, September 12th, I get a call from Apache, and they say, well, we're moving in tomorrow to build our well site. And I said, don't go on my property until you have an agreement with me. They didn't listen. I went down there. They broke down my fences, went on the property, created a well site much bigger than I thought they would, or they told me they would. And I didn't have time to get an attorney.
Terry,
they even tore
Terry, I can't. Yeah, I'm sorry. I can't adjudicate this for you or okay. Help you specifically. This isn't like a consumer hotline call-in number. Is there a point that you wanted to make or a question?
Yeah, the question I want to make is, do corporations, just because they own the mineral rights, does that mean that they have the right to go on your property without your permission?
If they own the mineral rights, yes.
They have the right to go on and
to the best of my knowledge.
Asking you
to the best of my knowledge, yes. It varies from state to state. But that's my understanding. I would strongly suggest that you get an attorney on this thing. And
well, I've had an attorney, and they all tell you
they're saying the same thing I'm saying.
Well, they're even worse. They can take any amount of land you want. I really don't believe that.
Yeah. I think it's the case. But you know, the other thing that you might want to do, Terry, is you might want to call your state representative, whoever represents you, your member of the House of Representatives. They have a constituent services person in their office, and hopefully they can help you out. Terry, thanks a lot for the call. David in Ankeny, Iowa? Am I saying that right, David? What's up?
That's correct. Hi, Tom. Thanks for all you've done for the United States. I just wanted to let your audience know that Kerry Branstad in Des Moines, Iowa, governor of the state of Iowa, has come in favor of the green slime and has wrote letters to the public schools in the fact that they need to use pink slime or else they'll have to use meat that has a leaner beef product. Or
right.
Not leaner, would have more fat.
Fattier beef products.
But isn't gristle,
don't
that is more fat.
Yeah, don't they make the pink slime there?
Yeah, oh, yeah. We're big with cows, but most people here that eat cattle and eat pig and enjoy their beef as I do, we're against pink slime to eat it. So most people here.
Even if it was called lean, you know, finely ground lean beef, if it was never called pink slime?
We're not that stupid.
Okay.
We live next to the cattle. We know in the state of Iowa, you don't drive 5 miles and don't come next to a cornfield. We know how this stuff works.
Right. Okay. I got it.
So, no, the people here really won't like that. But Branstad, our governor that's a Republican that's worked for slave labor here in Iowa, is going right along with Romney.
Well, 96.5% of all the political donations from this industry have gone to Republicans, so that probably tells you something. David, thanks for the call. From David to David in Springfield, Missouri. Hey, David, what's up?
Well, hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I had two things to just relay. One is that Occupy Springfield, Missouri, is alive and was active last Friday in protesting all three congressional offices.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Long is a Tea Party guy who's pretty hopeless. Roy Blunt's just a tool of corporations, and Claire McCaskill's made some bad votes on the Keystone Pipeline and NDAA.
Yeah.
So anyway, Occupy was working here in a pretty conservative area, but we're still going.
Good. Good.
Now the second thing was that the labeling laws in this country are just terrible.
And this is a classic example of where regulation is created by industry. It's called regulatory capture, where the industry says to people, you know, like this woman who approved pink slime, hey, you know, if you just approve pink slime, come work for us, and we'll make sure you make over $1 million, which she did. And the
trans unsaturated fat
right.
labeling is
right.
usually a lie.
And GMO labeling, I mean, genetically modified organisms. I mean, it's
can't
it's
find it.
No, and I remember, you know, back when we were living in Vermont, back more than a decade ago, there was this big kerfuffle because Ben and Jerry's wanted to put on their ice cream containers. You know, they were using milk from Vermont farmers who had sworn an affidavit that they were not injecting their cows with bovine growth hormone, and so it said no BVG. Or BGH or RGBH, recombinant bovine growth hormone. And the company that makes it, I think it was Monsanto, but whatever, one of the companies that makes the stuff, sued them. Sued Ben & Jerry's ice cream. Said, you can't say there's none of our stuff in your label because that makes people think that our stuff is bad. And, you know, went up through the courts and blah, blah, blah. And it is, you're absolutely right. We need labeling transparency, and we need to have regulatory agencies that are immune from regulatory capture, which is we need the same thing with members of Congress. They shouldn't be able to lobby or engage in any kind of activity that has to do with the government for at least 5 years after they leave office. And the same thing with people in going into or coming out of regulatory agencies. There should be at least a 5-year firewall there so that there's no obvious quid pro quo. And the same thing should be applied to the military. So, David, thanks a lot for the call. And let me pick up Doc in Jersey City, New York. Hey, Doc, what's up?
How are you, Tom? Tom, I just want to commend you because I don't know of any other political commentary show in which it's just correctly traced back that the catastrophe for the working class is traced back to the Reagan to the election of Reagan and to his administration.
Yeah, the so-called Reagan Revolution. It's when the big change happened.
That's right. I expected the perfunctory genuflections by the Republicans, but when you even get Democrats who still talk about him like he was some great president, even his foreign policy, countless people were killed and tortured in Guatemala and El Salvador during his administration.
Yeah, especially El Salvador.
This is disgraceful, and I think that we just have to – I think there's some hope with the Occupy Wall Street, but – you know, it's a little frustrating, as I called before and had mentioned, I think we need a Labor Party, not a Liberal Party, because I think that's why we have in the heartland, hearts and minds have not been won over, because liberals go crazy about a Christmas tree in front of a city hall, but that's exactly why people in the heartland, they look at that and they think that they're conservatives.
I don't think that liberals go crazy about Christmas trees in front of city hall. I think what happens is one or two liberals or atheists go crazy about a Christmas tree in front of City Hall, and thanks for the call, Doc. And suddenly Fox News blows it all out of proportion. It's a war against Christianity, don't you know? And that's what happens. Dennis in Shreveport, Louisiana. We got a minute to the break. Dennis, what's up?
Yeah, Tom, how you doing? I was calling you about the stand your ground laws that
uh-huh.
you've been talking about.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know the state of Louisiana had passed that law. But they passed it here also, and I was unaware of it.
Huh.
And I called my representative and talked to him. He said,
it's in close to 20 states now. The Koch brothers have gotten
this in. Yeah, I know. I saw the map across the United States of all of them, and that's when I saw Louisiana highlighted, and that's when I didn't realize it. But anyway, to give you an idea, the guy called about the grand jury in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
You probably know this, but grand juries only hear what the district attorney wants to tell them.
Hmm.
In this part of the way grand jurors work down here, what evidence that the district attorney gives you is the only thing they can consider.
Yeah. Did you see where the Supreme Court ruled today, 8-0, that if the district attorney lies before a grand jury, he can't be sued?
Yeah, I knew that was coming, though.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
so they're trying to,
this whole idea
all prosecutors and district,
right.
all of them are getting immunity.
Right. Absolutely, Dennis. Thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
We'll be back with more right after this. Oh, my. Speaking of Wisconsin, by the way, the things are getting hot there.
I read the news today, oh boy, about a lucky man who made the grade. And though the news was rather sad, well, I just had to laugh.
Welcome back to the place where smart people get their news. Speaking of news, brought to you by the new book Self-Empowerment by Ellen Ratner and Ann Gaiman, Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service on the line with us. Hey, Victoria, what's up?
Hey, Tom. President Obama had a press availability this afternoon with Prime Minister Harper of Canada and President Calderon of Mexico, and was asked his view of the Supreme Court arguments and the health care law and whether he thought it would hold or be overturned. He said he's confident Supreme Court will uphold the health care legislation, and said that it would be an unprecedented, extraordinary step of overturning a law that was passed by a strong majority of a democratically elected Congress. But he went further. He said, I just want to remind conservative commentators that for years what we've heard is the biggest problem on the bench was judicial activism or a lack of judicial restraint, that an unelected group of people would somehow overturn a duly constituted and passed law. Well, this has been a good example. I'm pretty confident this court will recognize that and not take this step.
Wow. Talk about, feeding them their own lunch.
Yes, throwing down the gauntlet,
yes.
I think.
Yes, a much better metaphor, yes.
Yes. He also spoke about the humanitarian part of the law. He also spoke about the economics of it and the legal aspect of it as well. But he said that he believes that it is constitutional. That was the key piece of it that he spoke to.
Yeah. Okay.
Also today, in a 5-4 ruling, the Supreme Court said that officials may strip search people arrested for any offense, however minor, before admitting them to jails in the general population or anywhere, even if the officials have no reason to suspect the presence of contraband.
Right. Now, in their defense, I've read pieces of this.
Right.
Scalia said that, I believe it was Scalia, said that the court shouldn't be second-guessing local officials. On the one hand, the court not second-guessing local officials sounds like a really good idea. And in fact, that's the argument that I make for not having minimum mandatory sentencing laws. It's the opposite of that, basically. That what has happened is the legislature has cut the courts out of the thing. But on the other hand, local officials seem to be the ones who, with the occupiers or whatever, if somebody has a political agenda, if somebody doesn't like somebody, they use strip searches punitively. And that concerns me. We've seen that happen in the last couple of months, in the last year with the Occupy movement. We've seen that happen over the years. I saw that happen back in the 60s during the anti-war movement and, in fact, was subjected to it myself. And purely punitively. Or maybe largely, I don't know, but that's my concern. And these 5-4 decisions, just you have to wonder, had it been for just one different member of the court, everything would be different, which raises the question, is this court really, should they have the power to overturn these laws, or, should it be up to the legislature?
Well, it's a very good question. I mean, when I see a 5-4 decision, I always find myself thinking, maybe they should only be allowed 6-3 as a minimum.
Yeah, supermajorities. I mean,
yeah.
Congress, you have to have a supermajority to do really serious stuff, like filibustering laws or amending the Constitution. Why not have a supermajority on the Supreme Court? And by the way, that could be put into place by Congress, because the Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution says that the Supreme Court shall operate under regulations established by Congress.
Ooh.
So Congress could require a supermajority.
That's interesting.
Yes. They won't do it, though, because they're all wimps.
That, well, that same reason they wouldn't put cameras in the court.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, Congress could mandate that, too. And Congress could mandate that the Supreme Court justices have to abide by the Federal Judicial Code of Conduct. And they won't do any of it.
Won't do any
of
it.
And it's just it's sad and it's wrong. Anyway, I'm with, oddly enough, Newt Gingrich, who said, you know, the first thing he'd do as president is take on the Supreme Court. And, you know, wow. It's not enough to get me to vote for him, but he, you know, I agree with him on it. Anyway, back to you.
Well, also,
I can tell you're in shock now.
I am. I'm fascinated. Fascinated. Yes. First thing, let's kill all the lawyers. Yes.
Yeah. No, well, not quite that. No, no.
No. Just quoting it.
That's from British. That's from Shakespeare, isn't it?
That's from Shakespeare. Yes.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Tomorrow, fireworks in the morning. The president is going to give a speech at the Associated Press luncheon, the American Society of Newspaper Editors Convention. He is going to speak about his own budget plan. He's going to outline it. Now, this is going to be very interesting, and they're going to be his first public remarks about the House passed spending plan. In other words, Paul Ryan's 2013 budget. Now, last year, in a speech this time of year at George Washington University, the president lambasted the GOP budget and called Ryan's budget less about reducing the deficit than it is about changing the basic social compact in America. And Ryan was in the audience.
Right. And then Ryan went out and got Ron Wyden to give him cover. I don't think that's going to happen again, or let's pray that that doesn't happen again.
No, I don't think so. Oh. But I think there's going to be some sort of fireworks tomorrow, because the comments from the White House after the budget were that Republicans banded together to shower millionaires and billionaires with a massive tax cut paid for by ending Medicare as we know it.
Right. And you know what's really going to be interesting is that it's not going to be tomorrow, but it's going to be the day after. Because for the last 4 days, Paul Ryan has been stuck to Mitt Romney like glue, you know, desperately trying to become his vice president. And if the president calls out Paul Ryan in a strong enough way, and he freaks out Mitt Romney, it'll be really interesting to see if he invokes a divorce between these two, or if he drives them closer together because he infuriates the conservative base and Romney says, I need a crazy guy on my right to be my VP.
Fascinating.
Yes, absolutely fascinating. Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. The two forensic audio engineer folks, you know, guys who check out audio work, have analyze the 911 call where the person was saying to the 911 operator, there's somebody screaming for help. And in the background, you can hear that person screaming for help. And then you hear gunshots, and then it gets silent. And George Zimmerman has said those were his screams, that Trayvon Martin was attacking him and that he shot him in self-defense. They have analyzed these tapes, and they now say with 99% certainty and at a level that is admissible as evidence into a court of law, according to them, that there is no possibility that that voice saying, help me, was George Zimmerman, the shooter, who asserts that it was him. There's apparently not a good tape of Trayvon Martin's voice to compare, but it definitely wasn't George Zimmerman. The plot thickens. Or maybe not. I mean, you could say the plot thickens. I think it's been fairly obvious all along. This guy was a vigilante. He was obsessed with young black men. as in, you know, harassing them, shooting them, driving them out of his gated community neighborhood, something that is almost never mentioned in the media. And, you know, you say, well, you don't try things in the press. This is an opinion show. I'm not the press, number one. Number two, I'm not an elected official. It's not like, you know, Richard Nixon saying, well, he looks, you know, Charlie Manson sure looks guilty to me. I'll tell you my opinion. It sure looks to me like this was murder. So time will tell how this is going to play out. But Tamara Holder on Fox, I mean, this is, you know, Fox News has been just relentless. In fact, I debated a couple of conservatives last Friday, and I was astounded that both of them took the position that we don't know all the facts, but it sure does look like, essentially, I don't want to put words in other people's mouths, but my takeaway from it was that they were saying that it sure looks like maybe this Trayvon Martin guy was a bad guy. Shouldn't have been there. And, of course, there's Geraldo Rivera. Shouldn't have been wearing a hoodie. He has now apologized to the family for having said that. Good on him for the apology, but, hey, the beginning? But anyhow, over on Fox News, here's Tamara Holder. Here's what she had to say about it.
And I also think that wearing hoodies on the floor of Congress is also stupid. I think that the blacks are also making this more of a racial issue than it should be.
This is a white woman, by the way, just so you know. And it's just, this is, if you're being killed, and you're being killed because of the color of your skin, and you're not one isolated case, but there's centuries of history of this. And in fact, similar cases have popped up all around the country. I think they're up to 9 now, where African Americans have been murdered by people who are not. And those people have invoked these so-called Castle Doctrine laws. These, I call them the NRA, Walmart, Alec, Koch brothers laws. The shoot first laws. We now have a bunch of them. Then it's not unreasonable to say, hey, wait a minute, they're coming after us. I object. I guarantee you, you know, when white people are the victims, Fox is all over it. And right-wing talk radio and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But this is not about, oh, gee, there's an African-American victim. I think I'm going to, you know, this is about, there's a radical injustice. And it's occurring at several levels. The first level is the fact that we have a lobbying organization, the National Rifle Association, which lobbies on behalf of the big gun manufacturers in the United States and around the world. And the nation's largest gun retailer, I refer you back to Michael Moore's brilliant Bowling with Columbine. You have the nation's largest gun seller, retailer, Walmart, and the world's, or nation's, maybe the world's, largest gun manufacturing lobbying organization, lobbying for a law, writing a law, essentially, that will reduce the number of lawsuits against Walmart for selling these guns and will, jack up gun sales for the NRA. And then it gets passed into the hands of the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, which is this shadowy group that meets twice a year. They used to put their laws online. They no longer do that. They're hiding this stuff now. And they get in these rooms where a member of Congress can pay $100 to be there. A lobbyist can pay up to $100,000 to be there. And they sit side by side. The votes are 50-50. Half of them are state legislators, state representatives, state senators. Half of them are lobbyists. And they sit side by side and vote on laws. And if the majority says yes, which would be all the lobbyists plus one Republican, for example, then those laws get given to the Republican legislators, and they say, here, take these back to your states and introduce them as laws. funded by the Koch brothers, been operating for decades under the radar, and making all kinds of bad law in America, including laws that say, gee, if you live in the inner city and you don't own a car and you've never had to have a driver's license, you can't vote. Oh, you were born at home? You're one of those rural poor in West Virginia or South Carolina? You don't have a birth certificate? You can't vote. Oh, you're elderly and on Social Security and Medicare, and you can't get out of your apartment to get down to the local bureau to get your photo taken for the government issued. You can't vote. Oh, you're a student. You're going to college part time or full time, but you claim your parents' residence for taxes. But the election happens while you're at school. Sorry, you can't vote. Do you get it? Or the anti-union laws, like Scott Walker passed up in Wisconsin, or the John Kasich passed in Ohio. I mean, there's all this toxic legislation, and the goal of all of this legislation is to make, is to create, as a caller earlier said, to go back to the days of feudalism, to create a serfdom. This is the economic system that Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney and all the Republicans and the Koch brothers want to take us to is the economic system that existed in Europe in the 18th century that Charles Dickens wrote about, or the 19th century, where you had a very, very small ruling elite, the royal family and the members of the House of Lords and the landed gentry. Very small number of people who owned most all of the wealth. You had a very small middle class, the mercantilists, the shop owners. In Dickens' story, A Christmas Carol, Scrooge and Marley, they were the middle class. They owned a small business with one employee, Bob Cratchit. So you have a small middle class, which is the doctors and the lawyers and the shopkeepers. And then you have this huge class of the working poor. In fact, they used to have maximum wage laws in the United Kingdom. Maximum wage. You couldn't pay somebody more than that because then they might pop out of the social class that they're supposed to be in. That's the world these people want to take us to because it is stable and they love stability.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's the new caste system for America. And then on top of that, you've got of course, the racist element associated.
Just another manic Monday. Wish it was Sunday. That's my fun day. I don't have to run.
Transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. Tom Hartman here with you. Michael in Dublin, Virginia. Hey, Michael, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Glad to speak with you. You know what bothers me about this Trayvon Martin situation is how corporate media is causing some kind of a racial divide and a racial explosion over Trayvon Martin. And we have people like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton speaking about this and give them their moment in the spotlight, taking advantage.
Are you trying to suggest, Michael, that there's no racial element to this?
So there is a racial element in the culture of the society completely.
No, yes. I'm talking about, are you trying to suggest that George Zimmerman in all probability did not go after Trayvon Martin because he was African American?
I think it's terrible that he did go after him. But what I'm speaking about, we don't find Al Jackson, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton talking about the lacrosse team offering an apology for how they hyped up this incident with the lacrosse team raped this black woman. No apology given there.
Michael, you have not heard me even mention those people's names. I don't get the point of your call.
Well, it's what they're doing is taking advantage of Obama.
Okay, well, Michael, you need to take that up with them, not with me. Larry in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Larry, what's up?
Oh, God, you threw so much red meat at me. I don't know where to start. So let's just start with Zimmerman and this whole situation. Here you are saying that such a toxic environment is being caused by Fox News, almost in the same breath as you race bait this entire issue that you don't know all the facts, I don't know all the facts, and let's say the guy is a racist. First of all, he's half Latino, half white. So are Latinos racist against black people? And let's just say he is a racist, okay? What does that have to do with the rest of the United States? What does it have to do with me?
Larry, if you were listening to me earlier, you would have heard me say that my biggest concern is that we are passing law, our legislatures are passing laws that are written by the NRA and Walmart, that are promoted by the billionaire Koch brothers through their American Legislative Exchange Council, through almost entirely Republican, wholly owned legislators. This is no way to pass laws.
Okay,
this is no way to make law in the United States.
Well,
and what it's doing is it's interfering with the administration of justice. You've got a police department that cannot arrest a man who apparently murdered somebody in cold blood after chasing him for a couple of blocks because he committed the crime of walking while black, apparently. And this police department has not been able to commit to do an arrest because of a law that was written by corporations and lobbyists and promoted by billionaires. Now, you tell me that's not screwed up?
Well, let me separate the issue for you for a second. You have one, which is gun control laws, which I'm probably the only...
This is not a gun control law. This is not a gun control issue.
You have, if you want me to talk or you want to just talk, you have two issues here. One is this law that's been written.
Yes.
According to some, they're saying that this law doesn't even apply to this guy. And I thought in our country you were innocent until proven guilty.
I am not a court.
That's right. Well, you know,
Larry, I am offering you my opinion.
You have a responsibility as a smart guy not to incite violence against anybody. That's what you're doing. This guy's innocent.
Larry,
might be innocent.
Larry, I am not inciting, I am not inciting violence. This is the amazing thing. When I get these conservatives who call in and they've got all these little talking points down, you know, it's like there's a checklist, right? And anything to change the subject away from the fact that this law was written by the NRA and Walmart, that it was brought into 20 state legislatures, probably more, but passed by somewhere between 16 and 20 state legislatures by Republican lawmakers who are bought and paid for by corporate interests and the Koch brothers. Don't discuss that. Oh, let's try and turn this into a conversation about gun control. Oh, you know, well, no, it's not about gun control. Well, let's try and turn it into a conversation about race. No, it's not about race. Oh, well, it must be that you're trying to incite violence. Come on. We're talking about the corruption of our legal process by a couple of billionaires and a whole bunch of corporations and lobbyists. And I just find that something really fundamentally wrong with that. And not a single conservative has called in the 2 weeks that we've been talking about this who is willing to address that point. Andy in Liverpool, New York. Hey, Andy, what's up? Andy, you are on the air. Andy is not listening. Kirk, you are on the air. I don't see a city for you, Kirk. I'm sorry. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Longwood, Florida.
Okay, great. So what's up?
Well, I want to talk about Medicare.
All right.
Well, first of all, I want to talk about back in the early 70s when I was probably 10 or 12 years old, and they were robbing the trust fund. Do you remember that? And it was a big deal all the way through the Reagan years. They were robbing the Medicare and the Social Security trust funds. And they were telling you can't do that because in 30, 35 years, the baby boomers are all going to retire.
Yeah. First of all, Kirk, nobody ever robbed the trust funds. Secondly, that was a talking point that was being put out by the Grover Norquist types. The people who wanted to literally wanted to rob the trust funds and privatize all, Social Security, Medicare, hand it over to Wall Street and to United Healthcare and big health insurance companies. The so-called robbery of the trust fund that you are talking about is that when in 1982, when Reagan reformed Social Security with the help of Daniel Patrick Moynihan and Alan Greenspan, you had the Moynihan-Greenspan Commission. They looked at Social Security. They said, okay, you got a rabbit going through a python here with the baby boomers. And when they retire, there's not going to be enough money. Social Security is not going to have enough money to pay for their retirement. So what we're going to do is we're going to have one generation, the baby boomers, starting in 1982 and ending around 2025. We're going to have one generation double pay. They're going to pay for their parents like every generation before them did, but they're also going to pay for themselves in advance. And we're going to set that money into a trust fund. And that's that $2.6 trillion trust fund that's sitting there right now. That trust fund has to invest its money in something. And so what they did is they bought treasuries, which is the safest investment in the world. Treasury bills, they pay 2-3% interest. And what the right-wingers were saying was, because you bought treasuries, the government was, you were loaning the government money. So the government was borrowing money from you, and the government was then spending that money, and therefore the trust fund was robbed. And it's totally wrong logic. It's convoluted, and it's wrong. And it's like, I'm astounded that we're still trying to wring out the right-wing talking points from the 80s. It wasn't the 70s. It was the 80s, from the Reagan era. It's incredible.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
The trust fund is intact, and those treasuries are just as valuable to Social Security as are the ones that George W. Bush was born with when he was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. Yep, it's the good, the bad, and the very, very eulotriciously ugly. Brought to you by EdisonFactor.com, a supplement for the brain. The good, Aung San Suu Kyi. Kyi, the opposition leader in Myanmar, also known as Burma, won a seat in the country's parliament following Sunday's elections. Kyi's party, the National League for Democracy, was seeking to win 45 seats in the election. And the fact that Kyi won marked a major victory for many in the country who have lived under military rule for the past 50 years. Despite wide reports of voting irregularities and voter fraud, it appears Kyi and Myanmar have started the journey to democracy without a U.S.-led war to force it on them. The bad. Texas Governor Rick Perry. Rick Perry and Texas are full steam ahead in executing another potentially innocent death row inmate. Gene Will was arrested for killing a deputy sheriff back in 2000, but there's a great deal of evidence to suggest he is innocent. Will is in the process of appealing through the courts, but it's not clear whether they're going to side with him. Since Perry became governor, 235 prisoners have been executed, many with questionable convictions. It's time Texas and the rest of this country stop the death penalty and the injustices that go along with it. And the very, very ugly Arizona Superintendent of Schools, John Huppenthal. 2 years ago, Arizona banned the teaching of ethnic studies in K-12 education. Now it's going after universities. Huppenthal said that suspended ethnic studies classes, like ones on Mexican-American relations, teach students to resent white people, and the university programs that educate public school teachers are to blame. He went on to say, I think that's where this toxic thing starts from, the universities. To me, the pervasive problem was the lack of balance going on in these classes. Come on. This has nothing to do with teaching students to hate whites and everything to do with Arizona's all-out assault on Mexican immigrants, and it's very, very ugly. That stands alone, doesn't it? David in Seattle. Hey, David, listen. Thanks for listening to Talk 1090. What's up?
Hey, Tom. That was extremely frustrating listening to that previous caller.
It was for me, too.
Amazing, amazing, amazing how thick-headed these people are.
Well, if you've got an agenda, and especially if you're being paid to promote the agenda, you stick to it.
Well, it's almost like if you built an interstate based on their reasoning, you would have nothing but bumper cars. You know, it's just they're built on chaos and changing the subject. But what I called about was the frightening trend of this NRA promoting these loosening of the gun rules, the propaganda you get on, like, Fox News with revisionist history when it comes to the racial inequalities, and our educational system, which has got this dominionist type of element sneaking in. I mean, I saw on Amy Goodman's show, a 68-year-old Marine veteran got shot when he simply accidentally pressed his medical alert button.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, what is going on?
In fact, I was
going
to cover that story today, and we haven't gotten to it. But you're right. In fact, he, you know, fortunately for all the rest of us, I guess, you know, it didn't do him any good, but his medical alert device recorded the entire thing. And as the police were kicking in his door, he said, you know, this is my testimony. I'm, you know, these guys are going to come in here and kill me. And he was a Marine. I mean, he was 68 years old, though. He was an old guy, and he wasn't well, and they shot him dead. I mean, it's
just... But the
just,
trend, it seems like there's a poison.
He was African-American.
Is there some sort of memo going around that there seems to be some poisonous elements of our police department that seems to be empowered or just brazenly making up their own judicial?
That memo went around in 1607 when Europeans first landed in Jamestown, you know, in Virginia. That memo has been going around ever since then. You know, what was Bradford's last name? The Pilgrim Father who who praised God because they were able to murder all the women and children as well as all the men in a Pequot village, Native American village, and take their land. And I mean, that memo has been going around for a long, long, long time. What's different now is that now there is a media that's willing to discuss it.
That's what I mean. The combination of the consolidation of the media and these types of surveillance powers that are now being empowered to local police, something's different recently in the last few years. That seems to be some sort of communication or some elements of certain police officers feel empowered to just do what they want to.
And what I'm saying is you've had abusive police officers forever. And you will until the day that, like many of the Northern European countries, we pay our police officers and our teachers the same as we pay our doctors. When that happens, you'll have that level of professionalism because you'll be able to demand those kind of standards. But right now, you've got police departments that pay less than sanitation workers in some cities. And the result is that you get people who are in it not because it's a good job, not because it's a profession, not because it's an honorable way to make a living for the rest of their lives and get a decent pension and retire. They're in it because, hey, I can beat people up and you get dysfunctional people. And I say this with a certain amount of personal experience. I went through the Georgia Police Academy back in the 80s when they opened it up for a few months in order to allow people, civilians, to go through the training program so that because the Olympics were coming to town, they didn't have enough security people. And I was working on a series. I wrote these four novels that were about a private detective, and I had been mentored in this by a private detective by the name of DeWitt Wanamaker down in Atlanta, and he got me in and went through the course with me. In fact, he was an old Southern sheriff, you know, an old police chief from small town Georgia, and DeWitt just told me all these amazing stories about what it was like being, you know, a white Southern sheriff in small town Georgia, and it's just, you know, in fact, we were sitting in the atrium of the Georgia Police Academy, this giant building, you know, where they can march up and down. 50 guys can march in formation inside in case it's raining and things like that, you know, bad weather. And it's also where the cafeteria is. And we're sitting there having some lunch, and these guys are marching up and down and ready to graduate. You know, new recruits are going to become state police officers, I believe. And I said to DeWitt, and this was 80, whatever the year was, in the 80s or late 80s, early 90s when the Olympics came to town. And I said to DeWitt, you know, what do these guys get paid? And I don't remember the number that he threw out, but it was something like, you know, 25, 30, 35, something like that, you know, as their starting pay. And
well,
I said, let me just finish the story real quick. I said, you know, you couldn't pay me that much to get shot at. You know, it's like we should be paying these guys so much more. And he said, oh, he says, you know, half those guys, he said, they, you know, you could pay them half that. You give them a club and let them beat people up and not have to pay the consequences. They'd do it for free.
Well, exactly. And then the thing is, you know, we talk about stop loss for the Marines. We need to definitely elevate the wages and also make sure the cops have enough time off so they're not getting to where they're just snapping.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We are abusing our police officers and we are abusing our police departments by not appropriately compensating our police officers. Just like the same thing we're doing with our teachers. And it's just it's a shame. David, thank you for the call. And, you know, speaking of the memo, anyhow, Christine in Beaverton, Oregon. Hey, Christine, what's up?
Yeah, hi. I just think that the people who are calling in for the show with these right-wing talking points and who are getting paid to espouse these views are really just accepting blood money. They're accepting blood money to espouse bloodshed morality and bloodshed propaganda. And this has nothing to do with the Duke lacrosse, has nothing to do with the reputations of Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson or slavery. A little boy lost his life, and we need to stop using all of the problems that we have in this country to launch pad our issues off of this person's murder. And the people who are out there buying guns based on emotion, they have to understand that they're being victimized by people like the Koch brothers to be afraid of their neighbor.
Yes.
That guy, Zimmerman, may have been a decent person.
Mm-hmm.
But look at what's happened to him as a result of him, of a person being brainwashed into thinking that, okay, a black person walking down the street is an immediate threat, and vice versa.
Right.
So we all have to understand there's a marketing campaign going on, inside of every culture to get us to go and purchase guns and take arms against one another.
Yeah, and that marketing campaign in the United States has been going on for a long time. You ever see Birth of a Nation?
Repeat that.
Have you ever seen the movie Birth of a Nation?
No, I haven't.
It was a silent movie. It was the first multi-hour long or longer than an hour silent movie in America. It was made in, I think, 1903. And it was about about African Americans taking over the South Carolina legislature after the Civil War, and had the worst stereotypes in it. And it was the recruiting movie for the KKK for the first two or three decades of the 20th century. And it's just remarkable. If you want to understand the racial history of the early 20th century. Watch that. It'll horrify you, but watch that movie, Birth of a Nation. But Christine,
yeah,
thank you. Your point is really well made, and you said it very well. Thank you. Garrett in Albuquerque, New Mexico, listening on KABQ. Hey, Garrett, we got a minute
Gary,
to the break. What's up?
And thank you for addressing this topic. I grew up in Los Angeles. Basically, I grew up with the Bloods and the Crips, but I never had to, actually be a part of that gang membership. I had four generations of attorneys in my family going back to the 1800s.
Hmm.
And one evening, I'm driving home, and I work in the legal field myself. I'm driving home with my friend Herman. He's black, I'm black. We're driving home, and we come across on, I don't know how well you know Los Angeles, but on Adams and La Brea,
mm-hmm.
there used to be a Pep Boys.
Yep.
And inside the Pep Boys, there were two white cops beating a black man to death with a muffler that I guess they took off the wall. So I slammed on the brakes, and Herman and I were looking over, and it was over our right shoulders. And suddenly, I felt
Gary, hold on.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Gary, hang on to that thought. We're going to come back in 5 minutes, and I'll let you finish it. We'll be right back.
Disorder from the sirens night and day, from the files of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you. Gary, listening to KABQ in Albuquerque. Gary, you were telling a story, and we hit the break. And I don't have any control over those. They happen when they happen. And so
well, you're doing a good job.
I wanted to hear the rest of your story. So why don't you just reboot the whole thing, okay?
Well, I'm driving down the street with a buddy. It's about 3 a.m. in the morning. We
Los
just
Angeles.
Had a good time at a party. Los Angeles, California, in the middle of the city. And we're just seeing a black man being beat to death with a muffler by two cops. And we're like, whoa, what's going on? And I hit the brakes. We stop. We're looking over, see these two cops over there. We're looking over our right shoulders. And then within seconds, there was a gun underneath my left earlobe. And I could feel the cold steel and hear the, it's like it was gun smoke or something. I could hear the trick of the clip of the gun.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, what? So I didn't move my head, but I looked into the mirror, and it was a Los Angeles cop. All we did was stop and look to see what was going on.
Yeah.
And then I looked to my right, and I had my passenger in the right seat, and it was my friend Herman, and he had a gun straight at, to his frontal lobe by another cop.
Hmm.
And so I just froze.
Yeah.
And I was about this kid's age. I'm 54 now, 55. I was 18. And all we were doing was driving and just stopped when we saw this, basically a crime being committed.
Yeah.
And so the cop who had the gun right underneath my left lobe just said to me, you, he used the N-word, better get the hell out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought to myself, no, you saw three of us die.
Because
I couldn't help that guy who was getting beat by the muffler. He looked like he may have already been dead.
Yeah.
And so I hit the brakes, took off.
Yeah.
But my parents did teach me as I grew up that any time you were confronted by the kind of man like Zimmerman, that the first thing you do, and I'm a pretty big guy. You know, I slam dunk in the old days. Mm-hmm. I would, you know, my parents told me, put your hands in the air when somebody is intent on harming you.
Isn't
that the story, man?
This is the thing that, Gary, that I think most white parents, many white parents before the Trayvon Martin shooting never realized is that African American parents have to have this conversation with their children that white parents not only don't ever have to have, but never even imagined that anybody else had to have. And mm-hmm. every person that I know who's African American has, you know, when this topic comes up, has told me stories out of their childhood, or people my age told me about the story that they had to tell their kids. And if you could speak to that, you know, what you were told by your parents or what you have said to your children.
My dad told me to always, you know, put my hands in the air. And yeah. I always did, and I had to do it. And I've traveled the world, you know. Mm-hmm. And I had to do it in 1973 in Beverly Hills. I had to do it in 1981 in Denmark. I had to do it again in 1986 in Spain, Madrid, Spain. Then I had to do it in West Berlin when the wall was still up, also in 1986. And then now I'm in Albuquerque. I've had to do it in 2008. So it's been like about seven times that I experienced what this kid who got murdered experienced. And each and every time I did what my mom, my dad told me to do. Put your hands in the air and surrender.
Yeah, but what Trayvon did was he ran away.
Twice it was with cops.
Yeah.
And there was one time when all of a sudden there were like three cops. All I was doing was walking to a friend's house in Beverly Hills, and cops had the guns on. The cop had a gun on me. All I was just walking down the street, hadn't done nothing.
Yeah.
I put my hands in the air, and then three or four other cops drove up and said, put your hands down.
Yeah.
I just said, no, sir.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're going to shoot me. You're going to do it with my hands up.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least when I fall over,
yeah.
my hands hopefully will still be up.
Yeah, record of it. But this
is a real problem.
And Trayvon, instead of stopping and putting his hands up, he said, I'm going to walk away from this guy. Yeah. And George Zimmerman followed him for apparently a couple of blocks. You know, he's talking to the police through the whole thing. And, man, it's a tough one. Gary, thank you.
He should be arrested. Thank you. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you for the call. Thank you for sharing your story with us. I do appreciate it. Mark, in Fayetteville, Georgia, Mark, we have a little less than a minute. I hope you have a short comment.
I'll make it real brief and quick. The gentleman who called in earlier, I understand, yeah, a lot of people will go ahead and put their hands up, which is good. But we got to remember that this Stand Your Ground law is just one of the laws that's basically a bad law. There's a host of them out there. If we're going to do what we need to do for Trayvon Martin or any other person out there that's particularly killed because of a bad law, we need to look at them all systematically.
Yep.
And not allow these people to use them as a shield to perpetrate a hate crime.
Well,
and that's black, white, Chinese, whatever. It's an American injustice.
Yeah, I agree.
Look at it like that.
I agree. And beyond that, we need to look at a process which allows a lobbyist-driven, billionaire-run front group, this ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, that allows them to buy off Republican legislators and have them introduce legislation which has been written by Walmart and the NRA. I mean, there's something fundamentally anti-American, in my opinion, about that. Okay, Mark, thank you very much.
The blood is also on their hands as well. You're right. The blood is on those corporations that sponsored and pushed the legislators to make these laws. They need to be brought into accountability as well.
Yeah, I'm with you. Thank you very much, and I appreciate the call. Coming up tomorrow, Van Jones is going to drop by. Plus, he's got a new book out called Rebuild the Dream, plus the best of the rest of the news and your calls, as always, here on the Tom Hartman Program. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. Show up. Participate. Occupy something. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman.
For audio and video archives, go to TomHartmann.com.